The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Welcome to the future you. Frank Lloyd Wright once said, "Study nature, love nature, stay close to nature, and it will never fail you." At Zija, we love nature. We study nature. In India, we discovered Moringa and created Moringa Supermix, a revolutionary new combination of organic ingredients, including natural vitamins, minerals, proteins, antioxidants, and omega oils. Zija's new Moringa Supermix will help you make a change for the better. Simply click on the Zija banner on the UKHealthRadio.com homepage. Power people need power vitality.
You're listening to UK Health Radio. Welcome to the Therapy Suite. I'm Duncan Ellison, a therapeutic counsellor with a focus on positive mental health. This week in the headlines, UK workers feel they can't talk to their colleagues about mental health. And does age affect the kind of foods we should be eating? We couldn't do the first show of the new year without tips on maintaining your resolutions. And in the Toolbox Talk this week, I'll be sharing information on a brand new book on mental health. So if good mental health matters to you, then this show is not to be missed. Join me, Duncan Ellison, as we open the doors to the Therapy Suite, only on UK Health Radio. Here's the mental health news making the headlines this week. As we head back to work full of newfound enthusiasm, it's been revealed that discussing mental health is the last taboo we feel able to discuss in the workplace. 2,000 British workers were asked to select from a list of topics they felt they could speak openly about with colleagues. The results revealed we'd sooner talk sex, money problems, or relationships than broach the topic of mental health at work. In fact, mental health came bottom of the pile, suggesting it's the last taboo of the workplace. Encouragingly though, whilst people still feel uncomfortable about talking about their own mental health, the survey shows they do want to support others. Over half said they would support a colleague if they noticed they were struggling with their mental health. However, 39% of these people said they wouldn't know how to do it. If you are looking for something new to challenge your mental health in 2018, group singing could be the stress buster of the year. A study by the University of East Anglia researchers found singing, particularly as part of a group, was essential in affecting mental health recovery. Group singing could also help tackle loneliness, which can be as damaging to health as not exercising, experts say. Researchers and group singing organisers say it is an accessible therapeutic tool which provides a low-commitment, low-cost means for mental health recovery within the community. Also in the news, as the new year gets underway, a new report on the nation's health makes dismal reading. In a survey recently published by the NHS, it suggests 66% of men and 57% of women were overweight or obese, whilst 42% of women and 34% of men were failing to meet the NHS's recommended exercise levels of 150 minutes a week. In a nutshell, the NHS's health survey for England with 8,000 adults uncovered alarming rates of inactivity, heavy drinking, and poor dieting, which has a significant impact on poor mental health. The report also highlighted how new parents really feel following the arrival of their first child. According to them, baby bloggers created an unrealistic image of what daily life is really like, with 52% of women suggesting other people's baby pictures made them feel depressed. The author of the report commented, "If this is an MOT for the nation's health, then we are failing on many measures. Good health, including good mental health, is the most precious asset any of us have, and this report shows we need to confront the reality that our lifestyles are killing us." Finally in the news this week, our diet and eating habits are affecting generations in different ways, it has been revealed. It is suggested that for good mental health, young people require more food that increases availability of neurotransmitter precursors and concentrations in the brain, such as meat and fish. However, good mood in adults over the age of 30 may be more reliant on food that increases availability of antioxidants, such as fruit, and abstinence of food that inappropriately activates the sympathetic nervous system, such as coffee and skipping breakfast. A significant milestone of this research is the understanding that dietary practices differentially affect mental health in young adults versus mature adults. Young adults who ate meat less than 3 times a week and exercised less than 3 times a week showed significant mental distress. Equally, with aging, there is an increase in oxidants, so our need for antioxidants increases. Oxidants cause disturbances in the brain, which increases the risk for mental distress. The same research team also looked at gender-specific dietary intakes to try and identify an explanation of gender-specific mental distress. An interesting array of news stories this week, some of which you may find controversial, not least the last story about the connection of dietary practices and how these affect our mental health. Whilst there's no suggestion that such research is a good thing, there is suggestion that the male brain reacts differently to the female brain when it comes to food consumption. That particular report also suggests a lack of regular meat intake could have negative effects on your mental health. And I'm wondering what the vegetarians listening to the show feel about this suggestion. I know many vegetarians who would say they feel mentally more astute because they are not eating meat, and this makes them feel cleaner and healthier. The report specifically says young adults who ate meat, red or white, less than 3 times a week and exercised less than 3 times a week showed a significant mental distress. Do you think it stands to reason that our brains require different nutritional inputs the older we get? I'm just wondering if your diet has changed over the years as you have got older. One thing we do know for sure is exercise has a direct correlation with positive mood. The more we exercise, the better we feel. I totally buy into that, but there is a proportion of society who are at a disadvantage. Agoraphobics, for example. If you can't leave the house, you are not going to get the exercise or fresh air your body needs to help your mental health. You may be aware, I suffer from chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia, and these conditions have a real impact on my ability to remain in a positive mood. We also heard this week that the NHS suggests the minimum exercise guide is 150 minutes per week. That's 2.5 hours. And I, for one, struggle to do an hour's exercise, let alone 2.5 hours. I would imagine there are many people that would like to do more exercise, but just can't physically manage it. Also, interestingly enough, your salary influences your gym habits. Healthcare charity Nuffield Health found that people on less than £20,000 a year use the gym less than 1 hour per week, whilst higher-earning people use the gym 3 times per week. Whilst we're discussing the gym, the number of dormant accounts outweighs the number of active accounts. Almost 70% of new memberships are taken out in January, but by April, many of these are dormant, with clients still paying the fees. A staggering £2.8 billion will be spent on membership fees this January. £2.8 billion. That's quite a significant number. In a similar story, the NHS has done an MOT on the nation's health. I find this funny that the story is released at the start of the year when people could be suffering the overindulgences of Christmas. There is another gender differentiation, suggesting women are in general more miserable than men. How do you feel about that? The survey reveals alarming rates of inactivity and negative influences such as social media, suppressed wages and a 6-year inflation high, all of which, according to the NHS, is making us feel inadequate, which contributes to poorer mental well-being. But as we heard in the news story, the biggest demographic to be affected is actually young mothers. 52% of women said pictures of perfect parenting on social media made them depressed. 43% said idealised pictures of parenthood made them feel inadequate. 39% of new mothers felt an increase in anxiety. And finally, 36% felt they were depressed. And young people's mental health is affected too. They're obsessed with texting, tweeting and Snapchatting, rather than meeting people face to face and starting an actual conversation. According to the NHS, and I find this staggering, young people touch their phones 2,617 times a day on average. Extreme users, the top 10% of people, touch their phones more than 5,400 times daily. And Apple confirmed that iPhone users unlock their phones 80 times every day. An NHS spokesperson said this report is a massive wake-up call to us all. It's frequently said that the measure of any nation is the health and happiness of its people. If this is an MOT for the nation's health, then we're failing on many measures. Good health, including good mental health, is the most precious asset any of us have. And this report shows we need to confront the reality that our lifestyles are killing us. Moving on, you'll have heard in the news that people are still uncomfortable speaking openly about mental health. Apparently, it is the one last taboo to be spoken about in the workplace. According to recent research, we'd sooner discuss sex, money problems, or relationships than broaching the subject of mental health at work. Here are some interesting stats. 30% of people felt comfortable discussing a relationship breakup. 26% felt comfortable talking about money problems. 20% on dating advice. 19% felt it was appropriate and okay to talk about religion, whilst 18% said sex, while only 13% said it was okay and they feel confident in talking about mental health in the workplace. In fact, as we know, mental health came at the very bottom of the pile, suggesting it really is the last taboo of the workplace. In the work environment, we should be able to reach out to our line managers or even close colleagues. But that isn't happening because a staggering 39% of people said they wouldn't know how to deal with a mental health issue. I'd just like you to think for a moment about how you would deal with a colleague who approached you to discuss a mental health issue. A great place to start is the Time to Talk Day on Thursday, the 1st of February, which is a chance for all of us to be more open about mental health, to talk, to listen, and to change lives. You can download a resource pack and learn how to talk to a colleague or a friend about mental health, and find out more information at www.time-to-change.org.uk. That's www.time-to-change.org.uk. In the meantime, you can find more information about general mental health work culture on the Mind website at www.mind.org.uk. On there, I found a few really useful tips on how to provide positive work environments. And here's a few of the tips that I found. You could start by creating a culture that supports staff to be open about their mental health. You could implement a policy outlining how to have a conversation with a colleague about mental health and how to support somebody with a mental health issue. And create a policy which outlines how an employee's time off and return to work is managed. Finally, at a look at the news this week, something a little more light-hearted. Group singing is the new low-commitment, low-cost therapy, which is gaining popularity up and down the UK. Paving the way for community groups, the Norfolk-based Sing Your Heart Out project has proved popular with people who are suffering with mental health conditions, and indeed the general public. The combination of singing and social engagement produces an ongoing feeling of belonging and well-being, researchers from the University of East Anglia said, commenting, attendance provides participants with structure, support and contact that improved functioning and mood. The study's findings drew on 20 interviews with participants, two focus groups with organisers and workshop leaders, and observational notes on singers over a six-month period. Interviewees all reported improvement in or maintenance of their mental health and well-being as a direct result of engagement in the singing workshops. For most, it was a key component, and for some, the only and sufficient component in their recovery and ongoing psychological stability. One participant involved in the study said, I've really enjoyed the singing group. I feel happier and less lonelier on the walk home. I find myself singing some of the tunes which stick in my head. I'm a very anxious and nervous person. I'm hoping the group continues to lift my mood, and I feel confident enough to continue attending. It's not the first time group singing has been associated with improved mental health. A study by Canterbury Christ Church University revealed that group singing improved people's mental health and well-being, including reducing anxiety, stress, and depression. Group singing could also help tackle loneliness, which can be as damaging to health as not exercising. University of Oxford researchers published a study in 2015 showing that group singing helped people to forge social bonds very quickly. This is particularly valuable in today's often alienating world, where many of our social interactions are conducted remotely via Facebook and Twitter, said Jacques Linet, a postdoctoral researcher in experimental psychology at the University of Oxford. Sticking with the group's singing theme, I found a video on the NHS website about how singing stimulates the brain, particularly for sufferers of Alzheimer's. Singing for the Brain is a service provided by the Alzheimer's Society, which uses singing and other activities to bring together people with dementia or memory loss. A group of participants and their carers talked about the service and its benefits.
Singing for the Brain is for people with dementia or memory problems. It's a social, stimulating activity which helps people to make new friends, to retain skills, to become more confident and competent, and make them feel that they have a community to belong to. They're not alone.
We just look forward to Fridays, you know, the weeks when there's no one this week.
We quite enjoy the half an hour before we start singing, where you have the opportunity to talk to other carers, and the singing really is the bonus afterwards. It's so light-hearted.
It's like I'm doing something when I'm very empty. I look forward to it.
To be honest with you, I don't know, but she actually gets out of it.
I just like it, you know. I can't say that anything else.
There is a remarkable preservation of melody and the words of songs in the brain. You've got rhythm in one side of the brain and the memory for words in the other side of the brain. The idea of remembering melody and emotion together is very strongly protected. It's not that a particular spot of damage is going to ruin it.
I don't find that I can talk a great deal. I don't think I say very much.
Sometimes it comes back. Sometimes you can't even remember that he's got a son and daughter.
This is a wonderful thing for people with dementia who cannot find the memory of a lot of things that are current in their lives, but they have this very strong sense of the words and the music.
She seems to recall the words to the songs, which is great, you know. Can't remember what happened 2 minutes ago, but she remembers the songs.
It's an empowerment for a lot of people, and a lot of people who have got so depressed that they've stopped speaking really become quite voluble. And that is the most remarkable change, and the carers are so grateful, because that's been the hardest thing for them to bear, is the lack of communication between them.
It gives you so much fun and pleasure. You can go back for the rest of the week, even though we don't see anybody at home. Here, it's a lovely hour of fun.
Elbow sits and baby, one, two, three. Elbow sits and baby, one, two, three.
It's the whole package, yeah. And I've found it really beneficial. When you're a carer 24/7, you need that bit of respite and relaxation, really.
If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. If you're happy and you know it, tap your knees.
One of the things that makes it different from a sing song is that we do choose to sing some uncomfortable songs. We choose to sing things that talk about difficulties.
Just clap if you're feeling sad. Keep it steady, don't hurry, and you won't have time to worry.
There are lots of songs that are chosen to allow people to express in a safe environment uncomfortable emotions which they really can't express to each other. So it's done in song, so it is a little tension valve release. So that's very helpful.
Just kiss if you're feeling sad.
I find it quite sort of uplifting. It's so light-hearted and refreshing, really. and we go home quite uplifted. And some of the things she does, it goes round and round in your head all week until you come back.
I like to say, come and try it 3 times. The first time you're going to be nervous, the second time you'll recognise people and feel a bit more comfortable, and the third time you can relax and enjoy it.
I think it's helping. Long may it continue.
I enjoy it. I don't know why. I but it is, I just go along with what's happening, and I think, well, that's great, I can do that, and I go along and do it. And I sometimes when we do that, we exchange hands. I'll suddenly find her hand grabbing mine, and I feel, oh, this is worth being here. And that's it. It's a big help.
The therapy suite.
I don't want people to tiptoe around me.
I would like people to treat me like any other normal person, but also just to be a bit more sensitive around me, not to be stigmatised, depression and everything, and telling me to cheer up and everything.
I wish I'd known how much I was going to grow and learn as I grew up and grew older. I wish I'd known how much therapy was going to help me and how much I was going to gain from that. And I wish I'd known that it was possible to meet people who would love me for all of me, including my mental illness.
That I didn't have to feel so alone, and that there was a lot of support out there.
That there are people out there and organisations that can help me.
I don't regret having mental health problems because it has made me who I am today.
I wish I'd known just how supportive people can be once you tell them what you're going through.
People are accepting. They're not going to walk down the street and cry, "You mental case." They're not going to, you know.
Don't give up on yourself.
You're listening to UK Health Radio.
Name it.
Wise words on the way, music from Nick Kershaw, and still to come in this week's Toolbox Talk, I'll be introducing you to a new book which is bound to be useful if you're keen to learn more about mental health. What about New Year's resolutions? We couldn't get together straight after Christmas and not discuss your resolutions. Things like healthy eating, regular exercise, and giving up smoking can have a real positive impact on our mental and physical health, and are central to many people's New Year's resolutions. Every year, millions of people make resolutions, yet almost 80% of us fail to achieve them. Most of us strive for unrealistic goals and ultimately set ourselves up for failure. And that can negatively affect our mental health. There are two words to keep in mind. Be realistic. Unattainable goals are often the enemy of achievable resolutions. So change one small thing at a time. Friends, family and colleagues can all help. Talk to them about what you're planning to do and tell them how they can help you. So a few things to think about then. You need to measure your successes. Stay motivated by measuring how far you've come each week. This will help you realise how small changes can make a big difference. Reward yourself. Celebrate when you succeed with a treat, which doesn't necessarily have to be the thing you're trying to avoid. You might reward the first month of your successful diet with a night at the cinema, for example. You need to treat failure as a small setback. If you slip and break your diet, forget to exercise or have a secret cigarette, don't despair. Learn from the setback. What situations made you slip? Can you avoid them next time? And don't obsess over small setbacks. It won't help you achieve your goals. Start fresh the next day and don't give up. You need to make your resolution stick. After a couple of weeks, the changes you've made will become a habit and part of your routine. So don't be discouraged if you're still finding it hard after the first week. Stick to it and it will only get easier. We know a healthy diet has major benefits for your mental health. But as we've heard, you need to treat yourself once in a while. My top tip is create a mood and well-being board. This will help you chart your successes and your failures. And you will have failures, but charting them will help you realise that success outweighs your failures. What about meditation? You clean your teeth twice a day, so why would you not clear your mind twice a day? It's easy and doesn't have to involve candles, incense and whale music. There are loads of different types. Transcendental, musical, mindful, and there are loads of free websites, podcasts and drop-in sessions you can go and try. And don't forget honesty. Nobody can ever truly know what's going on in your mind, so give them a helping hand. If you're having a bad day, tell them. If you're feeling tired, just say it. Letting people know how you are feeling is difficult, but it is rewarding. Believe me, once you start, it gets a whole lot easier. Thinking about socialising then. Believe it or not, chronic loneliness poses a significant risk for your long-term health, as much so as cigarette smoking. So meet up for a coffee with a friend, go to the cinema, do something you used to love doing, do anything. And finally, take advice. Look anywhere and everywhere for people who've been through similar things to you and listen to their advice. Find out what works for you, and when you do, share it. Here are 8 top tips from Mind to ensure you stay in, well, the right state of mind.
Here are 8 relaxation tips to help you look after your well-being when you're stressed, busy or worried. 1. Take a break. Take some time away from your normal routines or thoughts. Read a book or magazine, even if it's only for a few minutes. Run yourself a bath. Watch a film. Play with your pet. Chop some vegetables and cook a meal. 2. Focus on your breathing. Learning to breathe more deeply can make you feel a lot calmer and increase your sense of well-being. Breathe in through your nose and breathe out through your mouth. Try to keep your shoulders down and relaxed. place your hand on your stomach. It should rise as you breathe in and fall as you breathe out. Try counting as you breathe. Start by counting to four as you breathe in and four as you breathe out. Then work out what's comfortable for you. Three, listen to music. Listen to your favourite songs. Turn it up and dance or sing along, or put your headphones on and close your eyes. Really listen to the music. Can you pick out different instruments? Can you hear a drum beat or a certain rhythm? Let yourself focus on the music and let other thoughts drift away. Four, picture yourself in a relaxing place. Think of somewhere relaxing and peaceful. You might choose a memory of somewhere you've been or a place you've imagined. Close your eyes and think about the details of this place. What does it look like? What kind of colours and shapes can you see? Can you hear any sounds? Is it warm or cool? Let your mind drift and your body relax. Five, try active relaxation. Relaxation doesn't have to mean sitting still. Gentle exercise can help you relax too. Look for a gentle exercise class in yoga, Pilates, or gentle stretching. Take a gentle walk, going at your own pace. You might choose to go for a longer walk, but even a few minutes of walking can help you feel relaxed. Six, use a guided relaxation exercise. Guided relaxation or meditation exercises are widely available and lots of them are free to use. You can search online, look for an app to download, or see if your local library has any books or CDs. Have a look for local meditation or relaxation classes. You could try your local mind or use an internet search engine. Seven, get creative. Getting in touch with your artistic side can help you feel more calm and relaxed. Try painting, drawing, making crafts, playing a musical instrument, baking and sewing. Try not to worry too much about the finished product and focus on enjoying yourself. 8. Spend time in nature. Spending time outside and in green spaces can be great for your physical and mental well-being. You could take a walk in the countryside or through a local park. Taking time to notice trees, flowers, plants and animals you see on the way. Or you could spend some time taking part in conservation, whether that's digging in your own garden or taking part in a local green project. Don't worry if one technique doesn't work for you. Try it a few times, and if it doesn't feel effective, move on to a different exercise. Try to let go of your worries and take time to enjoy the exercises.
There are a number of misconceptions surrounding mental health. There's an enormous stigma. Britain is a country, perhaps more than any other, where you might say that the national emotion is embarrassment. And nowhere is that clearer than when it comes to issues of mental health. We're addressing a real crisis. One in four people in any given year suffer from a mental health condition.
My first overdose was in 2003, December. I felt I had no future. I couldn't hold down work. I genuinely believed that the people around me, for all the hurt I was causing them, would be better off if I wasn't there.
From about 18, 19, as soon as I went to university, I knew there was something wrong. I could feel there was a change in my personality, a change in myself. I was very, very low, very negative about life. My self-confidence, self-esteem and self-worth went. I didn't know who to talk to, where to go. I didn't know anything about mental health at the time. If I had, then I would have gone to Mind.
mind is composed of passionate and driven people who are absolutely committed to making sure that people with a mental health problem get the care and support and respect that they deserve.
It was my counsellor who initially recommended that I contact Mind, and it was everything that he said it would be. It allowed me to put a value back on my life. It provided me with a network of people who I could trust because I knew they understood everything that I was going through.
If it wasn't for Mind, I don't know where I would be today.
I'd be amazed if you said you'd never met anybody or you weren't related to anybody who had some sort of mental problem. And therefore, it seems to me a very natural choice to choose Mind. So that's what I'm saying to you. Choose Mind.
The Therapy Suite.
We'll be right back.
Before we move on, if you have a mental health story to tell, whether it's your journey or someone close to you, or if you run a mental health project, do get in touch. You can reach me on Twitter at Duncan Ellison, or you can email me, duncan@thinkduncan.com. I look forward to hearing from you. This is UK Health Radio. My name's Duncan, and I'll be with you each week to put a new twist on mental health. If you like this show and fancy some more, you can listen to all the different programmes UK Health Radio has to offer. You can choose the live play schedule or download your favourite programmes on demand, wherever and whenever you need to. Let's move on to the Toolbox Talk. I mentioned on last week's programme about a new book which was due for release this week. It fits in so well to this week's programme, particularly if you are beginning to recommence a mental health or self-discovery journey. As I mentioned, the book is part self-help, part fact, and part reflective. And if, like me, you are interested in everything positive mental health, then this book is well worth a read. I spoke to the author Rebecca Marks before Christmas, and she gave me an advance copy of the book, which I read page to page, and I think you'll find the title says it all. It's called The Framework, The Fluff-Free Guide to Understanding, Transforming and Reducing Stress, Auto-Stress and Anxiety. Rebecca goes on to say, I'd like to think that it's unique in its broad scope, and the fluff-free style means more people will actually finish reading it. I think a problem with a lot of books is that they contain a lot of fluff, and that means we don't get around to finishing them. She continues, I have personal experience with anxiety, and despite studying psychology at university, working in mental health and reading numerous self-help books, it wasn't until about 4 months in of researching and combining the new science of stress and anxiety did I fully understand my personal experience. With this book, I want to help people gain the same understanding and self-compassion as I now have, as well as an evidence-based roadmap for feeling calmer and happier. Another goal with my work is to raise awareness of the science behind stress and anxiety, so they aren't as stigmatized in society. Understanding aids compassion, and I'm not sure how many people fully understand anxiety. As I mentioned, I had a sneaky peek at a pre-release copy, and what I particularly liked was that, a bit like this show, it identifies the different facets of mental health and the contributing positive elements such as sleep, exercise and nutrition. But for me, the chapter that really resonated was the chapter on auto-stress. This is how stress can manifest itself as physical pain, and this, as someone who's been suffering with ME for over 10 years, has been something I've wanted to understand, well, for a long time. And Rebecca's book does this in a very inspiring way. So, The Framework, The Fluff-Free Guide to Understanding, Transforming and Reducing Stress, Auto-Stress and Anxiety, was released on the 1st of January as an e-book. You'll be able to download it on your phone and your tablet. And I'll post a link on my Twitter page, so you can keep your eye out for that. For this week's wise words, I turn to Sir Winston Churchill for a motivational quote to match the theme of today's programme. And I hope this gives you something to mull over this week. Success is not final. Failure is not fatal. It is the courage to continue that counts. Don't forget, if you have any mental health concerns or have been affected by anything raised on today's programme, please consult your GP or find a counselling service to talk to. You've been listening to The Therapy Suite with me, Duncan Ellison, only on UK Health Radio. Stay warm, stay well, and keep smiling. See you again next week.